Hello and welcome to the Spirit Talk podcast, where we'll talk all things spiritual. I'm your host and the creator of the podcast, Brandy Bolton. Join me at looking at spirituality from many different angles. There will be no stone left unturned, from science and spirit to topics that some may call woo-woo. I will also discuss my own experiences as a developing psychic and medium. This podcast is for all the seekers out there, and I sincerely hope you enjoy. Hello, Spirit Talkers. Thank you so much for joining me. Brandy Bolton here. This is Spirit Talk. I am so glad you're here. I know it's been a minute. Whew, I'm glad I'm here. It's been a little bit of an adjustment, a little bit of production hiccups here at Spirit Talk, this party of one who runs the show. Unfortunately, a few things out of my control that have made a delay in the show. And I promise you there are more coming. There are a bunch recorded, actually. Well, by a bunch, I mean two. So there will be more in March. Don't worry. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for standing by. I am so glad you're here. I'm not going to do a shout out today because I am headed right out to the woods in about 10 minutes. I'm going to unplug, spend time with my family, get some soul time, some food for the soul by spending time in the forest. I'm so excited for it. So the shout outs will wait until next time. I have a guest today. I was so delighted to speak with Barbara. It was actually back in February. Barbara Wythe is an author, a channel, an activist, a co-creator of Conflict Revolution and Synergy Alliance. She is that and so, so much more. I know you'll love listening to Barbara. It was really a delight to have her on the show. She shares bits and pieces of what she has learned from Albert Einstein in her years of channeling him. Yes, Albert himself. Albert Einstein himself has given Barbara information, and she has been a channel for him and many more. And let's hear her talk about it. It was beautiful to speak with her. Unfortunately, I did continue talking to her well past rolling. I'm so sorry to tell you that. I need to stop doing that. Sorry, listeners. All of Barbara's links are in the show notes. Please enjoy this episode of Spirit Talk. Here is Barbara Wythe.
Brandy.
Very nice to meet you too. I just hit record. I would love to get right into it.
I'm ready.
Where are you talking to us from?
Paris.
And look at, I just love, sorry, listeners, you can't see this. Barbara, we are recording, we are seeing each other, but they're only hearing us.
Okay.
So, but, oh, those beams behind you and that space, it looks magical.
It is so beautiful. It's an apartment that I rented. My mother passed away in 2018, and I made sure she could be at home at the end of her life. And she was so grateful. She would help me take my little trips to Paris. So I was in this apartment after she passed, and it was the place that I mourned her. So it's nice to be back here joyfully.
Oh yeah. You can transmute that energy a little bit by bringing joy in right now.
Yeah. I'm collecting it all up and transmogrifying it. It's really nice. So.
Oh, good for you. I'm happy for you. Where do we start? I want to get to know you a little bit. What I have heard you speak about with regard to your past and how you got to where you are, channeling Einstein, among others, and doing your work with Conflict Revolution. Where did it all begin, Barbara?
Well, the channeling part of it really began, I often say, with my music. I started playing piano when I was very, very young, teaching myself how to play, started writing songs when I was young. And the process of writing music for me is very much like when I sit down to channel Einstein. I go into the nothing and listen, and then I'm able to bring back information and translate it, whether it's into melody and rhythm and words and the structure of a song, or if it's information that's coming in from what for me turns out to be what we call the party that's headed up by Albert Einstein, these incredible souls that are working in afterlife for world peace. And how I bridged that gap was that when I was young in high school, a friend of mine had a mother who was this channel. We didn't call her a channel, but she gave us readings. And so I had this opportunity at a very young age to be exposed to information in this way. And I studied with her for probably 10 or 15 years. I would get a reading, write down what I thought it was going to be, what her notes were, and then I would watch to see how my life unfolded and what was really accurate and what did this mean and what did I think it meant and what did it really mean. Mm-hmm. So it became a really nice learning experience. And then in 1987, I started to spontaneously automatic write when I was writing a letter, kind of took over my hands. And I knew what it was, but it was still this kind of surprising that this, you know, and I said, well, who are you? And they said, we're sound. And, you know, it just made sense to me, being a musician and a songwriter. And my mentor always said she was just an antenna. So there wasn't any entities or anything. So that's how I became a channel. I started doing individual channeling sessions. And in 1993, I wanted to know, what would this voice that was coming out of me say if there was a group of people? Mm. And I couldn't find anybody in my current clientele, so I sort of gave it up. Nobody seemed to want to have a group. And then Teresa McMillan came for a reading as a referral, and she sent a bunch of women, and then she sent her best friend, Kim Phelps, who came in the fall. And then they started, Kim and Teresa were best friends, and they started coming to my gigs. And on the break, so like good stalking, you know, they'd come and they go, what does this mean? What does this mean? And we'd start talking about what was really being said. No one had done that before with their readings. Mm. And so at the same time I was going, here's my group. They were saying to themselves, maybe if we got the group together, maybe she would come. And so that's how we had the first group channel in December of 1993. And it's from that work that absolutely everything has sprung from. And certainly not with a lot of intention. And when I say that, I mean, I don't think we really knew what we were doing. We didn't know what they were going to tell us. We didn't know what they were going to say in a group. And yet we were just hooked because what they were telling us was changing our lives. And what they said was, well, first of all, they said, you can call us angels.
I was just going to ask you that. At that point, did you know who you were dealing with here?
No. And, you know, I think we had been reading some books about the Pleiades and some other people who were channeling entities with weird names. And mm-hmm. I never was comfortable with that. So when they said, you can call us angels, and I kind of went, okay, well, the three of us had this talk, and what we decided was, as Kim said, I don't care if it's the Easter Bunny. What they're telling us is profoundly changing our lives. And what they said to us basically was, we have this revolutionary process that we want to test of resolving conflicts that we think will be the pathway to world peace. So we're not going to focus on world peace. We're going to focus on resolving this conflict in this revolutionary way within you. Mm. And the natural byproduct will be that peace will manifest. Mm. And so, yeah, sure. You know, we were all in, and we were doing sessions. We were doing master sessions and then triad sessions with the three of us. And our lives were really changing dramatically. And then we had our first fight. And it was, as you can imagine, I mean, three women. And we literally were having this fight. And it wasn't below the belt, or, you know, we were fighting about kind of theoretical things. And no, yes, and you this. And I said, wait a minute, we just channeled this master session that we call conflict resolution. Let's go get the transcript, because they're telling us they want us to do this. So let's do this. Mm. What read was, if you're involved in a conflict, the root of your part of the conflict is within you. And you know, today in 2024, it just, you know, makes sense. But back in 1994, it was kind of a revolutionary idea. It certainly was to me, because I was very victimized. I was very outward focused, you know. And when we read it and we looked up at each other, and we all just started crying, because it was like, oh my gosh. And so I could come back to the table and go, okay, here's what I need to be doing. You know, this is how I can be better at this. And then Kim stepped up and said, you know what? And me, here's my, who, what? That was revolutionary for us. And even more important, and I tell this in the book, because we published our diaries in 1997, Diaries of a Psychic Sorority. But after that fight and after that revolutionary way it resolved, I went to work. I was playing at a hotel. I'm a musician, and I was playing at a hotel. And there was a waitress there who never even had the time of day for me. She never said hello to me. She was just grumpy. I walked in that night, and she could not talk to me enough. She's like, do you like Patti Smith? I've got some cassettes if you want. And she put $20 in my chip jar to, you know, prime the pump. And I started to realize that this is what they're talking about. When we change within us, there's this natural change that happens outside us. And again, you know, this isn't really brain surgery, because if you walk into a room like this, or you walk into a room like this, you can shift energy. So yeah, that was the beginning of how I began channeling groups and coming away with this incredible process that then I started training as we called it conflict revolution. Not only because it isn't conflict resolution, it's really much different than that, but also it's revolutionary. It really has a revolutionary way of manifesting that peace around us when we make the peace inside us. And so when our book came out, I got us a literary agent, and she called me one day and said, I've got a metaphysical tabloid in London who's looking for an interview with Princess Diana on the 1 year anniversary of her death.
And they knew that you were a channel. So they went
Yeah.
to you. Oh my goodness.
And
Okay.
so I know. And I was all kinds of like, what? Because I had discovered that I had this, I call it intuitive arts, I guess, that I could communicate with people who had passed on, but it was because they were coming to me. I would have this sort of vision. To me, it was like I could look over there, and not that I could see them over there, but I would see them in my mind. Like I can see the thing, and but over here I can see, sense that they're standing there, and then they would tell me stuff and say, get this to my.
Would this come in a moment of stillness, or did you intentionally sit down to automatic write or channel, or how did that
No,
work?
it started with well, there were people who had passed on in my life earlier that I kind of always had this sense like, are they still here? But it really started very much with Teresa's mother. We had been sitting around the office just talking and talking and talking, and what would happen is somebody would say, oh, you know, I really miss my mom. She passed away. And I'd hear this kind of I called it a little swoosh, because it was almost just like air moving. And then I would imagine, like, standing beside her, this woman that I could describe, you know, she was thin and kind of slight and had this big shock of hair. And then I'd say, hey, was your mom thin with a big shock? Yeah, and then we could start to talk. So it kind of, that's sort of how it happened for me, just attesting. And then one day when my mother was alive, and I first introduced her to Kim and Teresa, and we went out to lunch, and she could not, my mother is not that talkative. She could not get enough of these girls, these new girls. And like, what about this? And what about this? And afterwards, I said, that was so weird. My mother is not that talkative. And And Teresa said, she reminds me of my daddy. My daddy had that gray hair like her, and then swoosh, there was her dad. And they're like, yeah, your mom kind of let us, use her facilities to be able to talk. So there was this, we're like, oh. So I had those, but oh, I'm supposed to go to Diana? I mean, what are we talking about here? How do you do this? I've never done this. This is not my deal. I only wanted to ever be a rock star, right? So this whole like spiritual like leader was not my gig. But so I thought about it, and finally I said, you know what? Let's just try it. Let's just see. I'll sit down and I'll type the questions. I'll channel the questions and the answers, and then I printed it out and I read it and I wept because it was not only so detailed about her relationship with Dodie and what the dynamics were and how he wanted to worship her and she was done being worshiped, but they had to come to this impasse about how we were going to do this. And then her whole message was, if everybody who put flowers in front of the palace after I died would make peace inside. And if we could get this information, say, in a metaphysical tabloid where there might be 40 million people reading it, we can make a huge difference in how we can affect how people can contribute to peace. That was her whole message.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so the tabloid flew me out to New York and spent 5 hours with me, but they didn't want it. So we went on to interview. We made a list, my agent and I. I mean, wouldn't you? It's like, oh my God, I
Not
can do
juice, not juicy enough for them, I
No,
guess.
they no Camilla, no
Right.
Charles. That's what they were looking for. Because that was the biggest scandal of the time was, what had happened with them. And true to Diana's nature, she would not mention their names.
Right.
That
She's
was not
talking
her.
about peace within and huge spiritual concepts. I'm sad that they didn't use it.
I am too, because I think it would have been profound, but I really, right now in my life, what's going on in my life, I'm thinking to myself, okay, but the concept is what I think is about to unfold, is that in this day of influencers, this is going to get in the hands of somebody. And in this day and age, you can have a podcast like a Joe Rogan or a Russell Brand or a, Tucker Carlson. You can have all these people that can reach 40 million people in a night. So that potential still exists, but we couldn't have done it because then we wouldn't have gone on to start making this list of who else we can interview. So some souls I would imagine going and they didn't want to, and then some would step up, like Nicole Brown Simpson, O.J. Simpson's.
Really?
Yeah, and that was really, really a profound thing for me too. It was for me kind of proof that this was bigger than me, because there's always this unbelievable thing in my head, like this cannot be Einstein. I mean, really, come on. I mean, it sounds good, but and so what she said that was so telling to me was that I always thought that when you passed away, you went to this place that was just kind of love and light, and your cares were taken away. Oh no, not when you leave your children behind with the guy who murdered you.
Yes. Did she give you confirmation of that?
Yeah. And a really, really detailed synopsis of how he was raised in, I don't know if you'd call it reverse racism, or I don't quite understand the language, but the prejudice of the whites, and yet he had to be beholden to them to get where he had to be, and that was this anyway. So by the time we got to John Kennedy, who also absolutely verified what we are now seeing coming out in, the FBI stuff about what happened, he said to us, okay, you don't have to think up people anymore. We are a group. We've been writing. We want you, and we'll tell you who's coming up next. So next he came up, Jackie. which was really interesting. And then came up Einstein.
Wow.
And we didn't even have him on our list.
Yeah.
I mean, I who doesn't like Einstein? But I wasn't like a big Einstein fan.
Mm-hmm.
But when I channeled him, and I channeled him verbally, so I didn't type, this was the voice that wasn't coming out of me. This was the voice of all my readings.
Really?
This was the voice of sound.
Wow.
This was the voice way back when I started writing music, like this energy, this vibration of, it was like my father or something. It was so familiar.
Hmm.
And what he said was so stunning to me. It was just one revolutionary idea after another. Like, you know, ADHD is really a disease of the parents.
Hmm.
Because you want to control your child's behavior, and the child is supposed to fit into the, you know, and on the Great Plains, all the Native American children, all the indigenous children,
mm-hmm.
just ran around all day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they live wild under the, so this is, anyway, there was a lot that he said in that interview, but I was so enthralled that voice was so familiar that I wanted to do a book just for him.
Uh-huh.
So in 2005, which was the 100-year anniversary of E equals MC squared and his miracle year,
mm-hmm.
I thought, I'll just, what will he say? I had no idea what he'd say. And I thought, well, I'll channel like 6 readings and then I'll go edit. So I spent the winter like imagining he was here and he would say to me, okay, Google black holes. Like, okay. All right, take these 3 terms, lens, source, and observer, which are actual scientific terms of a black hole, and put them here. He was building this map.
Wow.
And what it turned out was he was delivering to me a unified field theory, which is something that he couldn't do when he was alive, and something that scientists are getting closer to. And what that means is, as it is now, as it stands now, science on the microcosmic level doesn't operate in the same way that science on the macrocosm. The planets allegedly have a whole different way that they operate under this new, the scientific theorems, than how atoms and smaller particles. So people have been searching for this unified field theory, which would explain how things operate the same in the macrocosm as they do in the microcosm. So he's delivering this to me, and he's having me draw these maps and these pictures. And he's explaining that there's a human map of human consciousness, because you cannot have physical reality without an interaction with human consciousness. Without us, it's all just math and potentials. And then he delivered a quantifiable scientific definition of compassion. Compassion is the 5th fundamental force of the universe.
Holy Dinah.
Right. <laughs> I know. And I'm just like, wow. So this is really the scientific, and the whole way he went into the root of compass, and how a compass is something that draws circles, and so compass impels energy to create these circular membrane domains,
mm-hmm.
called compilations of consciousness, mm-hmm. that surround all of the mathematics that you are going to experience as you in the lens when we get to the surface of the planet. Because he said this, all of it, the source, everything begins in the center of the earth. I was like, the source of everything is in the center of the earth. Yes, because it's like a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's spinning so fast and it's so hot compared to the external edge of the earth that it creates a condition like a black hole, he was telling me. And because I don't know anything about science,
mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, so I have to go out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And tell the world that the source is in the middle of the planet and it's like a black hole. And I don't know. I have to just trust that what he's telling me isn't going to get me laughed out of any place that has a scientist in it. Like, is that possible? Never heard of such a thing. But the scientific definition of compassion was so compelling to me. Mm-hmm. And it made so much sense. And the whole map made so much sense. And it is this, his theoretical unified field theory. And so when I published that book, now that was in 2007. And in 2007, I thought this conversation, it's called Imagining Einstein, Essays on M Theory, World Peace, and the Science of Compassion. Back then, I thought this was the most important conversation that could be had on the planet right now. Mm-hmm. That we needed to be talking about peace. We needed to be talking about these revolutionary ways to resolve conflict within us in this way. It's brilliant how conflict revolution works. And so I left everything. I left I call him my future ex-husband. We're still very good friends. And I left my home and I took this book and I happened to coincidentally get invited to appear on a podcast in 2007 that was, it was actually broadcast around the world to about 500,000 people. And that was just like, I got invited everywhere, all over the world. I could have been traveling for 10 years on all of the invitations that I had to come to Greece and come to Mallorca and come to, so that's what I did for many years, about 5 years. I just traveled the world teaching, training, channeling, and I got to sing along the way. And in 2016, I published my definitive work of Einstein et al., Manifestation, Conflict, Revolution, and the New Operating System. So it's the whole complete scientific unified field theory illustrated with maps and everything. And then instructions on how to do conflict revolution. And it's Einstein's proof. It's his theoretical proof of why conflict revolution works the way it does. That when you really resolve on these inner, these three human dimensions that we work with, that we naturally manifest peace around us. And it's been tested over and over again. And if we do it, it does work. The inspiration is how to get people to be willing to do it.
Right. Have you got his unified field theory in front of theoretical physicists?
I haven't officially yet. But two things are happening. One happened was when I first put out Imagining Einstein, one of my first book tours, I was booked into it was called a metaphysical meetup. Are you familiar with Meetup?
No.
Meetup it's an online platform where you meet online, you meet each other online, but you have actual events in real life.
Mm.
Cool. So, but I thought metaphysical meetup, I thought like, you know, woo woo, you know, talking to the angels. And it wasn't. It was amateur physicists, amateur chemists, these scientists. And I walked in and they're talking about chemistry. This guy's talking about chemistry. And I'm thinking to myself, oh dear. Because, okay. And they went on and on. Finally, somebody was like, will you let her speak? So I get up and I said, okay, so here's the deal. I talked to dead people. I talked to Albert Einstein. He gave me this theory. I'm not here to prove to you it's Einstein, but will you tell me what you think this is?
Uh-huh.
And they all went crazy. I mean, everybody who I ever have trained this or drawn the whole unified field, just they stand in front of it and just stare at it like it's a mantra or like a mandala.
Mm-hmm.
And the physicist was like, well, what you've said is you've taken the zero point gravity theory and you've married it to the blah, blah, blah theory. Mm-hmm. And it's turned out to be the rod, right? Right. And I'm like, I don't know.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't me. I don't know. I just want to be a rock star. So they were really affirming.
Okay.
And then, but what I have, which is just kind of blowing my mind, is that when I get back to the States, I'm on a kind of a European peace tour right now. coming back in April, I will be speaking at the Science of Consciousness Conference at the University of Arizona in Tucson in April. And this is a this is it. Everyone who attends, everyone who speaks, well, not everyone, you know, I think Deepak Chopra might be there, but it's very much about the scientists and the scientific proof of consciousness.
Fantastic. We need more of that.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Finally, so finally putting our energy and hopefully funding into studying woo-woo concepts and spirituality, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So and all of this,
you go on.
No, I was just going to say, all of this that we've been talking about, this is the incredible marriage of science and spirit.
Yeah.
When you have compassion with the capital C as the fifth fundamental force of the universe, the intelligence that uses the four fundamental forces to impel the physical creation of matter one step at a time, when you have that, what is the root of every religious dogma or every religious thing is compassion.
Right.
And the compass was his original actual physics inspiration when he was a little kid. The compass was what sent him into science. So anyway, yes, I'm very excited.
No kidding. And what does Einstein himself say is his motivation behind this? Not that world peace and compassion isn't motivation in itself, but is he kind of taking on the role of an ascended master, or is he a great teacher? Does he speak about that at all?
Well, what he says is that when he died, like we all do, when we die, whatever we're emotionally attached to, we take with us, which is why we reincarnate with people over and over, because we generally tend to hang on to our kids or, you know, when we die. And that's why the Buddhists train all their whole life for the minute they die, they're not attached to anything. So when he died, he was, first of all, attached to getting a unified field theory. He was very much, very much attached to how to end war.
In life, not only, he was.
Yes, in real life. And in the 30s, he had the series of letter writing he did with Freud. And it was part of the League of Nations was trying to promote peace after the First World War and restore relationships in Europe. And so they asked Einstein to do a public, they would publish these letters. So he wrote to Freud, who is also in Party of 12. And I never knew any of this until much, much, much later after the book was done. But so the first question he wrote was, how do we end war? And both he and Freud quickly came to the conclusion that one world government is not the way to do it.
Thank goodness.
Smartly. Well, yeah. Unfortunately. Anyway, so what Freud decided was that there was really no concrete answer, but there were some sort of indirect answers about. And the first one was to really cultivate really open minds that were hungry for the truth. The second was cultivate community and connection, human connections. So now you've got the intellect and the emotion, and show them the truth of war. Show them the horror that it is. Don't sugarcoat it. So Einstein's last manifesto that he wrote, he died in 1955, and they read it that summer, was this pleading with world leaders to find peaceful ways to resolve conflict, because World War III is something no one will survive. And he goes on to lay out exactly the horrible death that we will all go through if we cannot find this peace. And that's what he left the planet with. And so it really makes perfect sense to me after all these years of this unfolding. You see, it didn't just end up one day. I thought, hey, maybe we can talk to Einstein. My life has been really divinely guided to be this. And now I can tell you, I mean, I've been doing this. You can see how long I've been doing this, and never have people been so hungry and ready and wanting to know what should we do? How can we make peace?
Mm-hmm.
And we have this elegant, very simple, not always easy to do, but simple to understand, makes perfect sense process of how we ourselves become our own self-monitoring mechanism. That's what conflict revolution is. We mm-hmm. teach you what the three human dimensions are, what their form and function are, and it's a, you learn like a completely new definition of emotion. And we teach how to what he calls align to compassion, which is basically this. Emotion is this primordial soup mm-hmm. of that underlies all the physical world. And it's moving up from the center of the earth, right? We've got our compilation of consciousness. And it begins to split into, because we're headed into form, right? We're going from energy into the lens where we're sitting here, separate in form.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts to pull apart. The chair starts to pull apart from me, you know, and it comes up. And the second is intuition. So we have this human dimension of intuition, and it is the small impelling statements that tell us the next most advantageous steps for the good of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what compassion infuses into the system, is this understanding that we all are one and we have to work for the good of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And then it moves to the third human dimension, which is intellect. And intellect is specifically designed to be defining. So when you see the glass of water, somewhere in the intellect, in the subatomic part, we don't hear it, you and me, while we're sitting here, but that is glass, that is glass, that is glass, that is glass, that is glass. So there's an intellectual description
mm-hmm.
that of that. And the idea is, if we're aligned to compassion, intellect is observing present moment, and it's listening for intuition's impelling. Like, what's the next step? And then as soon as it hears that, it uses free will, which is contained in the intellect, mm-hmm. to implement what intuition tells it to do.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is, because you don't make decisions with your heart, you don't do that. The heart is impelling you. Intuition is impelling you what decision to make always. Intellect has been given this power in its ego to be the place where, if I'm going to turn left, it's in the intellect that the electrical synapses go down my arm, so I grab the steering wheel and turn to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Intellect has that power.
Mm-hmm.
So intellect can say no to intuition.
Right.
And we all do it. Intuition, you know, it says rest, slow down. And then intellect goes, I can't slow down. I've got a million things to do. And if I don't do them now, boo, 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 boo. And then off we go. We make the decision. We ignore our intuition. And then we end up run down, or we get in some sort of accident, or we're stressed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Einstein says that place in this operating system between the intuition telling you the next thing for the good of the whole, basically the voice of God,
mm-hmm. right?
And the ego being able to say, no, I'm not going to actually take that step. I'm going to take this step, mm-hmm. is where all the conflicts in the entire world originate. Every conflict that we are seeing play out from macrocosm to microcosm is because there's that conflict in humans in that place.
Wow.
And it's so profound. It's so simple. And yet, you know, I've been for years skeptical in a good way, because I want to see it, right? What? What do you mean? I'm looking at now World War III. This is all because people aren't listening to their hearts and following it. Is that what you're saying? Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for breaking it down like that. That does make perfect sense. Even in the little things, like yesterday when I was driving down the road and my heart felt, I need to turn right. So my intellect said, okay, we're going to follow that. And it was because my intuition was correct that Had I turned left, which I normally do every other time when I'm taking this route, there was an accident there and I would have been held up. And so even in those little things, it makes sense, even when we're not dealing with large conflicts. So, wow, that's really, really beautifully spelled out. And thank you. I'm so grateful for Einstein working through you to give it the science twist that certain people can't.
Exactly.
Sounds like he's really working on some karmic stuff himself, given that he was maybe in conflict when he died over this kind of thing. And wasn't he involved in splitting the atom as well? Or.
He wasn't his mathematics were.
Gotcha. Okay.
And, I've asked him in the past too about, I mean, what were you to do? Not bring forth the science? Like hide the science because somebody might turn it into a nuclear bomb? You couldn't have done that. But he did refuse to be involved at all in any of the uses of that. He would not get involved in the Manhattan Project. And I had a client last year whose grandfather was an astrophysicist from Italy who had worked with him and who did work on the Manhattan Project.
Oh,
And
wow.
she said, the client said, at the end of his life, whenever she would ask him, which wasn't often, about it, he would go in the other room and weep. So I think there was a lot of. And think about it, it was World War II. I mean, World War I was supposed to be the war that ended all wars. And World War II ended up with Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
I mean, the really the horror of what Einstein was seeing coming, I guess, isn't necessarily a surprise if you know that, humans need to be this monitored. We have so much power that we don't know. We need to have a self-monitoring system where we can keep ourselves aligned to compassion. Otherwise, we get lost. That's what's happening in the world today. People are.
And as we do that, thank goodness, I do believe that we are, as a collective consciousness raising up in vibration. I believe that, do you?
Absolutely.
And as we use these revolutionary resolution techniques that you've channeled and brought through, that could be the even more of a catalyst to move us up into kind of a new earth, what people may refer to as that, or just a new vibration or perhaps dimension. What do you think about all that new earth stuff?
I absolutely believe this is what conflict revolution is, because if you look at the model, just basically, from the center of the earth to the surface of the earth, this is this gravitational wave that is you or me. And when it hits the surface of the earth and it breaks through and creates the lens, remember I said source, lens, observer. So the lens where our bodies are, and it's projecting and perceiving this whole universe as we sit separate at the table. Well, this part of that wave between the center and the surface is where the three human dimensions operate. So the emotion is always flowing up and intuition is always impelling, and we don't even hear it. It's like beat, heart, like that's an impelling and intuition. And when we as humans revolve around and get to know these parts of ourselves, it's a perfect system. So whatever is on this part of the wave, whatever the condition of this part of your gravitational wave is, it will perfectly project into the lens and create. And that's why you can have a perfect system that's projecting war, because it's conflicted. And but it's still going to perfectly operate to perfectly create what's on that wave. So if we turn in, if you individually, now that you've heard this, and anybody in your listening audience, you don't even have to go do conflict revolution. You just understand it, and then you understand the importance of those times where, like yesterday, where you were aware of the functioning of your operating system, your intuition was telling you to turn right, You heated the for whatever reason it was good. And that's aligning to compassion, because that's the operating system we want our intellect to be observing and listening and then implementing what comes up. And that means all that extemporaneous thinking about tomorrow and yesterday is not even needed. It's so much more exciting. I can tell you, after all of these years, I've reached this point in my whole life where my operating system is, I don't really fret much about the past or the future anymore. I'm so in, and look at me here in Paris, traveling around the UK for the next 2 months. I'm manifesting by making sure I'm listening to my intuition. And it means you have to pivot. You know, when the thing doesn't happen, the ball, you know, you think you're gonna throw the ball that way and you can't because somebody's in your way, you pivot. You just let the intuition move you to the next, and intellect isn't busy hanging on to the past or judging you because you dropped the ball or da, 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 da. You're in the flow. So I have great hope that even though we're seeing a lot of chaos, what's happening is more and more and more people are being struck to the core of who they are by seeing what they're seeing in the world. Compassion is being forced open in them to have them say, I cannot sit here and stand by and watch genocide. I need to, what? And so they're ready. And me too. I've got the answer.
And it starts with us as individuals working on ourselves.
Absolutely.
And I just get this visual image of not allowing the intellect to be the driving force or the person driving the bus, but allowing our well, emotional landscape, but primarily intuitiveness, lead the way more so. Hey, is that what you're kind of saying?
Yes, that it's like a trio rather than Diana and you know the backup singers. It's a trio. And also that when we get that sync in, when we don't want to control with our intellect, we don't want to do away with the ego by any stretch of the imagination. It's like this incredibly necessary piece of the whole operating system, because as emotion flows up and intuition impels, and then intellect projects. So I always say it's like the difference between quitting smoking and going on a diet. Quitting smoking, you just stop and put it all away. Going on a diet, you still have to eat. So you have to project. You're projecting the table and the computer and the whole physics, you're projecting. But when you know your human side of it, of what you're projecting onto other people, and the way to learn that is we teach people how to completely detach the emotional energy from the intellectual energy and deal with the emotional energy, not to suppress what's, you know, the bad emotion, but how to completely process emotion differently outside of the intellectual, doing it with the breath and moving all of it. And not letting it marry to a thought that says, well, she did me wrong, and so I have to go do this, you know, this projection. Not allowing that to happen, but instead, now we're moving the whole bit of it. We don't have abscessed, you know, because when you don't feel, it just gets abscessed inside you and it builds up and then it projects as conflict or physical ailments. And so as we move all that, like we're emptying out the basement as we breathe it all through. And the beautiful trick, I think, it's not a trick, but it's one of the things I learned, is that emotional energy that we're projecting, and there's a chair. I mean, imagine the creative, you're creating that chair through this projection. That's power. We can take that emotional energy, even if it's depression or anxiety or anger, all those negative ones, and with our breath and our self-love as we're processing it, we can marry it to any thought you want to have as an intention for world peace, for. You're praying for somebody who's sick. You're trying to manifest something in your life that is regenerative and good for you. You can use the whole emotional body to fuel that, to fuel that intention. Mm-hmm. And it's, people don't think that. They think, well, I can't be angry because no. You don't want to be angry and have it marry a thought that says now you have to obsess about somebody outside you and give them all your power.
Right.
But marry it to a thought. And I've done this. I mean, I do this all the time where I, you know, I have that anxiety in the middle of the night. And then mm-hmm. I start to think, oh, what do I want to create? Uh-huh. Oh, I want this opportunity. And so I start breathing and really focusing on what I want to create. It fuels it. It fuels that creation, just like joy does.
Beautiful.
Really exciting stuff.
That is very exciting stuff. I love how you just put all that, because it has to go somewhere. So channel it into something that's useful for yourself or for your loved ones. Yeah.
Well, and when you see how simple the system is, you know, conceptually, how it works, and then it, you know, you have to do it. You have to get mad. You have to be in traffic where you're pissed off and then catch yourself and go, oh, okay, here's some of that emotion I want to harvest. I want to capture and breathe through. We have a whole different, I'm just so excited to get this into the hands of psychotherapists mm-hmm. and psychologists, because it really can revolutionize a lot of the way that people approach trauma and healing.
Yeah, so do I. I can't wait to see that become a little bit more widespread and mainstream. So are there very practical steps or tips on for how do people to use these techniques?
Well, what I would say, if people want to start off on their own, mm-hmm. the first thing is to develop a witness of yourself, right? So you wake up every day after, of course, you say your great prayer of gratitude. Thank you for another day in the most amazing life I ever could have dreamt up. That's mine.
Beautiful.
Then you have to set that intention. Okay, today I'm going to witness. Now, what we do in ConRev is that when you have this conflict and you have to identify the intellectual description of what it is into mm-hmm. a little soundbite, like, well, she doesn't respect me, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's that soundbite. There's what you're going to witness. So this is a thought experiment. You set out in your day to say, oh, I fully intend, I'm going to watch where I don't respect myself or I don't respect somebody else. I'm going to just watch myself through the course of a day. And when you do that and you set that intention, it's not that you're always, you know, cognitive of that witness. You still get caught up in the day. You know, you got to talk to people, you get to blah, blah. But there's enough time between the times where you actually have to be engaged with somebody at the cash register, or when you're standing in line, or when you're sitting in traffic. When you're sitting in traffic or standing in line, you can do anything you want with your mind. So then that's when the intention will kick in and go, oh, wait, what does that mean? Okay, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What might my intuition be telling me? It's an impelling for the good of the whole. And you get to know yourself. You start to get to know yourself. And the other thing I would say is when you get into the emotion and you're locked, we all get there, the mind and the emotion lock, step away, actually see yourself pulling apart the emotion from the intellect and just breathe mm-hmm. for a couple of minutes. It's that simple. Now there's more techniques but it's really that simple. But how do we capture our attention in the course of a day? We have to kind of stalk ourselves to pay attention to these things, because there's so much going on in projection. And this is a miracle that we're projecting the entire universe experience that we're having. It's so miraculous. Mm-hmm. How do we pay attention? That's how you train yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That makes perfect sense to me. So really practicing becoming the observer, or in what you're saying, the witness of self, is a very, very important step. Beautiful. Sometimes when you say just breathe, sometimes I say to my kids and myself, even if we're stuck in those emotions or stuck in the moment of anger, we'll sing it out.
Yes.
We just
Absolutely.
observe what's in the room and sing about it and make up little songs so it can feel fun and inject that little moment of joy as well. And it's a game changer. There's no being angry after that.
How old are your kids?
8 and 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a whole series of kids' music I wrote with a karate teacher.
Amazing.
I see a mess, I pick it up.
Love it.
I'll send you some.
Please do. My kids
Yeah.
are in martial arts. I feel it's great discipline for the
Oh.
body and mind too. So, yeah,
Oh my gosh,
fantastic.
that's such a great coincidence, because that song that I mentioned, it has karate references. I block, I kick, I see. So they'll be able to, they'll be doubly meaningful for them. So anyway.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much. Okay, you've shared so much with I feel like I could talk to you forever, Barbara, but
Me too. It's so exciting.
yeah, it is so exciting and I'd love to have you on again because I do have so many more questions for you, but we'll leave it here for now. What I want you to share is how do people get in touch with you? How do they see you? How do they consume your work and channeling that you've done with Einstein and the party.
Well, I have a YouTube channel, Barb With, a YouTube. You can find me. It's sometimes hard to find me because of my last name. When you Google
Yeah.
Barb With, you get every Barb With Stephen at the whatever. So, but synergyalliance.llc is really the major, the psychic sorority and all of our books. We've got 7 books, and but barbarawith.com has some of my other things. I'm also a journalist. I also wrote a book about how to become a small publisher and write your book.
Oh.
And I've got a new column that I want everybody that I know to go read. I'm building, it's called Breaking Formation. And
Okay.
it's about us and how do we tackle this enormous propaganda that is ruining the hearts and the minds of really good people at this really exquisite time. And my thing is that conflict revolution addresses that. Like, it addresses the original microcosm of your own propaganda. The voices in your head that say, I can't do it, and you project, and it gets it under control. And so, yes, barbarawith.com. And if you want to hear my music, that's barbwith.com. And I've got some music videos. I'm an amateur music videographer, so I've got some
Oh,
stuff.
fantastic.
Yeah, and then partyof12.com, partyof12.com is my oldest. I haven't been active with it, but it's probably very, very, maybe from 2008. I've got channeling downloads that, I mean, there's so much free information on my YouTube channel. I probably have 174 videos of channeling of different things. And let's have me back too, and we'll do some channeling maybe.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that so much. Yes. Oh, party of 12. So is that where you had 12 different people that you were channeling in?
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's
Okay.
where I
Okay.
met Einstein. Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. Please come back and do some channeling for Spirit Talkers.
I absolutely will. And I see you give me hope. All of you young people, I know I look like I'm really old, but I still feel like I'm 19 and in rock and roll. But you young people are just you're lighting up my life. I just turned 69, and I never thought I'd live to be this old. But if I live as old as my mother and father, they were like 80, 97 and 96, then this is my life for the next 30 years.
Well, you look fantastic. You do not look 69.
Thank you so very much. I'm about to shave my head, so
Oh, that's
I'm gonna
great.
buzz cut. Yeah, I decided I'm
That's
walking around Paris.
great. That'll look
But
great.
anyway,
You'll rock that. Yeah.
so yes, I will come back.
Thank you. And thanks for all your links. I will put them in the show notes as well. And yeah, we're just getting started together. This is our first hour of a few, maybe.
I have a feeling.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You bet.